Chapter 1. Dragon. The dragon arrived shortly after the winter moon and wrapped its long body around the village at the base of the cliffs to rest until spring. The ridge's tall cliffs shielded the beast from the frigid north winds, and the town provided it nourishment, albeit under duress, began the old man. Now dragons are girt and dangerous creatures, but, despite what your mothers may tell you, they don't eat people or even small children who stay up too late, he added with a grin and a wink to the younger members of his audience. He was rewarded with muffled giggles. Princess laughed with the others, despite having heard this story many times before. It was told every year on the night before the spring moon to remind them of how their village was born. Tomorrow night would be filled with feasting, laughing, and dancing as they celebrated spring, rebirth, fertility, and the goddess Estra. But tonight was about remembrance. Stories like these were the way her people remembered the past, and this particular one was special to Princess. Her given name was Edlin, but everyone just called her Princess, since that was what Edlin meant in the old language. She snuggled closer against her mother's skirts, feeling as though she was the 6-year-old girl who had lived through those terrifying times, and not the full-grown 13-year-old woman she was today. Princess felt safe and loved as she huddled around the fire in the center of the large plank lodge with the 20 or so villagers. These were the only people in her world, and Princess felt sadness as she watched the firelight flicker over the weathered faces of the few remaining survivors of those terrible days and the following 7 harsh years. As I was saying, continued Orvin, the storyteller, with a knowing smile, he was Princess's grandfather, and he liked that she enjoyed these tales. Dragons don't eat people, but they do eat just about everything else. Local townspeople have no recourse but to give a dragon whatever it demands, and it won't leave until it has devoured every animal, crop, and grain in the area. Dragons also become bored with too much rest and crave wealth, which is where we come into the story. Princess shivered and felt her mother snug the blanket around her as she closed her eyes and followed the story in her mind. She began visualizing the tale, as she half listened to her grandfather's words and half remembered events she witnessed firsthand. For weeks, the dragon, who was named Kilwulf, enjoyed the hospitality of the townspeople at the base of the escarpment and listened to tales the townspeople told about the castle at the top of the cliffs. The stories of the riches guarded within the walls of this castle grew as the weeks passed until the dragon demanded an audience with the king who lived there. Eventually, King Osred descended from his castle to meet with the insolent young dragon. It was not a pleasant exchange.
"Osred," began the dragon, "I am told that your kingdom extends far along the roads to Bath and Weston, and that you charge a toll for all who travel them. Is this true?"
"Why, yes, Kilwulf," replied King Osred. "Those roads pass through dangerous forests, and my army patrols them to keep travelers and villagers safe in the 50,000 acres of the kingdom of Fjörgensen. The meager fees I charge only cover the expenses of the services my people provide."
"Ha!" snorted Kilwulf. "Your so-called kingdom is nothing but a small part of my domain. Any tolls collected belong to me, and I demand that you bring me all of your gold immediately."
King Osred then quickly stood and said, "In that case, I must return to my castle."
"Very well," replied Kilwulf as he returned to his dinner. "Have your men bring your treasure here by first light."
But Osred turned as he prepared to ride off and proclaimed, "I have no intention of giving you anything, you lazy beast. My kingdom, my people, and any treasures they hold are mine, and I will not give you even one grain of wheat. No one has ever breached our castle's walls, and you'll be bored and starved long before any siege could draw us out. Begone, you fat, lazy lizard." With that, he rode off before the bloated dragon could get up to chase him. All dragons are known for their terrible tempers, and young Kilwulf was especially headstrong, prideful, and powerful. He was not going to tolerate an insult like this, and decided to not only take all of Osred's riches by force, but to destroy him and his castle as well. 2 nights later, Kilwulf used the silvery light of the winter's second moon to illuminate his way through the craggy gorge up to Osred's castle. He left shortly before midnight and quietly slithered his way up the narrow, winding canyon. The ground quivered from Kilwulf's massive weight, despite his attempt at stealth, as he silently crept up the road.
Thus, we felt the dragon long before we could see or hear it, and we were ready. Osred was an old and wizened king who had fought many battles. He knew that experience and treachery were the best ways to beat such a large and powerful adversary. He counted on the young dragon's rage, eagerness, and overconfidence to cause him to attack via the shortest route through the gorge, rather than taking the long march around the escarpment. Horns sounded as soon as the head of the dragon was seen near the top of the gorge, and rolling balls of destruction were released from the hilltops. Osred had constructed huge 20-foot diameter balls of hewn trees lashed together and filled with tons of rock. A dozen of these were rolled down ramps near the top of the rise and went careering through the gorge, crushing everything beneath their terrible size. Their massive weight and speed gave them so much momentum that nothing could stop them until they eventually tore themselves apart after crisscrossing the steep road almost all the way down to the valley below. Kilwulf was not killed, but he was gravely injured. We heard his groans and wails echoing off the canyon walls for 2 days until he slithered away. 2 weeks later, we saw what was left of him slink off to the east and disappear. Our cheers rose to the sky as he receded into the distance, but our joy was premature. When King Osred visited the town below, he expected to find the townspeople thrilled to have the dragon leave before it depleted their food stores, but he found a terrified population instead. Kilwulf had not left to withdraw into his cave and nurse his wounds. He had learned from his mistake and was taking the long route around the escarpment to attack from the flat land to the north. He had also left a message for King Osred.
"Be it known that every citizen of Fjorgensen is now my sworn enemy and will be immediately executed on sight. Osred's castle will be destroyed within a fortnight, and no trace of the kingdom of Fjorgensen will exist by the spring moon."
King Osred immediately began preparing for a siege and dispatched riders to warn his kingdom's villages. Several days later, a lone rider returned from the road to Wilton. Kilwulf had rounded the escarpment and was traveling down the road, destroying everything in his path. Every man, woman, and child in every village he passed had been killed, and every building and field was burned to the ground. He would arrive at the castle within a week, and should he destroy it, he would then continue down the road to Bath to obliterate the remainder of the kingdom of Fjorgensen. Osred knew that Kilwulf had to be stopped, and that the castle was the only place where he had a chance of defeating him. He recalled every soldier under his command to the castle and brought the local farmers and livestock into the keep. This would be his last line of defense. Fjorgensen Castle was built at the top of the cliffs above the town of Cheddar. The cliffs formed a nearly impenetrable barrier along three sides, and previous generations had extended the natural defenses by building a high, curving stone wall 400 paces along the northern side. This wall was unlike those of other fortifications of the time, which were typically round and located on top of hills. The outer wall of Osred's castle consisted of two concave arcs which met at a point in the center. This meant that any attacking army would be surrounded by archers firing from above. It also meant that anyone who breached the center gate would then be below a gauntlet of archers until they were well within the keep. This clever design was possible due to the steep terrain protecting the other sides. Another difference between this castle and the others of the time was the material used to construct it. Most Saxon buildings were made of wood from the dense forests of the region. Fjorgensen's castle wall was made of rough-hewn stone. This was partly due to the availability of shapeable stone at this location and partly due to the Roman and Britain influence in the region. The result was that no army had ever breached the wall of Fjorgensen Castle. The typical way to overcome such a fortification was by laying siege. Armies would form a blockade to prevent anyone from leaving and simply wait for hunger, starvation, or disease to take their toll. Osred had prepared for this by building and filling a huge granary in the keep and by maintaining some arable land behind the wall to grow fresh vegetables. The biggest issue with a fortress sitting at the top of a cliff was fresh water, but Fjorgensen's castle had an answer to that as well. Back when the castle was first built, someone had put their ear to a small crack in the earth and thought they heard water. The ancient king had had his people begin to chisel a small well through the solid rock. Even though it was a mere 2 feet across, it seemed like a hopeless effort until the bottom fell out about 20 feet below. They had broken through a tall, domed chamber with a stream flowing across the bottom, 50 feet below. Some unknown, probably terrified, people were lowered into this dark abyss, and they managed to dam the stream to create a pool deep enough for buckets to be lowered to fetch water. Fjergensen's castle now had an unlimited supply of fresh water. So Osred felt prepared to fight Kjolwulf with food, water, supplies, soldiers, strong defenses, and a well-stocked armory. He also believed he had considerably more patience than this brash young dragon, and expected that at worst he would need to hold Kjolwulf off until spring, when the lizard would lose interest and wander away. Osred was wrong. The first indication of Kjolwulf's return was the smoke from the nearest village as he burned it down. Kjolwulf arrived a day later and positioned himself just out of the archer's range in the pastures that spread to the north of the castle. He looked as strong and healthy as ever, yet his first attack was easily thwarted. He lunged upon the castle walls, but was stopped by the crossfire of the archers. Kjolwulf was driven back in pain, and despite his huge size, only managed to kill one of Osred's soldiers. That casualty was Osred's only son, Prince Bjordrik. Night fell as Kjolwulf retreated, and Osred withdrew to mourn the loss of his heir. It was the night of the new moon, which brings the kind of total darkness no one ventures into except for wolves. So we went inside and rested for the next day's battle. That was the mistake that would cost us the castle, because it turns out the dragons also do not fear the darkest of nights. Screams and fire woke us up. Kjolwulf had used the darkness to draw close to the castle wall and had begun spitting balls of fire into the keep. Our archers raced to shoot the beast, but it was too close and too much damage was done. The dragon had incredible range, and its spit exploded and burned everything for 8 feet around wherever it landed. Our castle walls may have been made of stone, but the buildings inside were wood, thatch, and wattle and daub. Soon, everything was ablaze. The wall was about to be breached, and in one last desperate act, Princess's father gathered as many of the castle staff as he could and led them to safety through a hidden entrance to the secret cave below the castle. The path to this cave opening was narrow and treacherous, but he managed to lead over 40 people inside before Kjolwulf crashed through the walls. No one ever learned what happened to King Osred, but we suspect that he fled with his treasure because a company of Kjolwulf's army sifted through the rubble searching for it for 40 days and nights. Osred did, however, have his men dump all of the seed food down the well and cover the hole with rock before his escape. His reasons for doing this might have been a petty gesture of not giving Kjolwulf a single grain of wheat, but it meant the refugees hiding in the cave below had sufficient food and water to survive until the dragon left. The survivors gathered whatever they could carry and departed as soon as the dragon was gone. Kjolwulf was continuing his path of vengeful destruction towards Bath, so we traveled the opposite direction on the road towards Weston. There were rumors of an old abandoned village a half-day's hike away. It was hidden in a valley between two hills about a mile off the road and had been vacant for so many years that the side road to it was overgrown and easily missed. Few people would have remembered it, and Kjolwulf had probably killed anyone who did. The survivors arrived here on the evening before the spring moon, 7 years ago, and have not been seen since. No one ever will, either, because dragons, like kings, never forget their threats.
Orvin finished his story and gazed at his granddaughter sleeping in his daughter's lap. Princess may now be a woman, but she was also still a little girl. He offered to help her parents, Hugh and May, carry her home. Tomorrow was going to be a busy day.